To replace a member of staff, there is statistics that it costs 67% of someone's annual salary to replace that team member. And if you can keep retention very high, actually paying 10% above the market rate for their role is still great value for money. A lot of our clients cite our benefits package and the way that we treat our team as one of the core reasons that they chose to work with us.
You're listening to Australia's podcast for accountants, Tax Talks, the podcast to grow your firm.
Welcome to episode 415 of Tax Talks. This is Heide Robson, and thank you for sponsoring this episode to BGL Corporate Solutions, Australia's leading provider of ASIC compliance, SMSF, investment management, identity verification, and AI-powered paper-to-data software solutions. Now, if you haven't listened to the last two episodes, please go back and listen to episode 413 and 14 first, since this episode is the last one in a three-part mini-series. So in the last two episodes, we spoke about the client and fee structure of StriveX in the UK, but also more importantly, their social media campaign. In this episode, let's speak with Rachel Harris about how StriveX creates the team culture to allow this amazing growth they had, growing from £50,000 to £1 million within 3.5 years. And when you consider that growth, consider that it's not in Australian dollars, but in pounds. So the growth is even more impressive. As in the last two episodes, we start with clips from Reza Hooter's interview with Rachel in his podcast called the Profitable Accountant Podcast, where he interviews Rachel in episode 141. I highly recommend this podcast. Please go and check it out. It will be really worth your time. Just skip through the first 5 minutes or so, and then the real gold comes your way. So we first play you clips from that interview in episode 141 of The Profitable Accountant, and then we ask Rachel more questions. So here is Rachel Harris of StriveX in the UK and Accountant She in social media.
Chapter number 6, team structure.
So we've got 18 members of staff. We are a team of 18, so that includes me and James. So 16 full-time members of staff. And that is split out into a couple of things. So within the accountancy practice specifically, we have two field work teams. So we split that into business services, which for us is bookkeeping, VAT, CIS, management account, or the inside of the business. That's business services. And then we have a statutory year-end team. And so we have managers in both of those teams and then accountants that work beneath them. A subtitle between manager and accountant, which is a portfolio manager. And so that is somebody who manages their own portfolio of clients without having to like directly report to a manager. So maybe they are really, really great at managing their own portfolio, but maybe aren't ready to manage junior members of staff. So they become a portfolio manager. So within every team, we've got managers, we've got accountants that work underneath them. Each manager can support between 3 and 6 juniors, depending on how junior they are. I feel like an accounting junior ranges from someone who just left school all the way through to someone who's doing their final ACCA. And we all know that they look very different. And so if they're super confident people, I would expect competent and confident. I'd expect a manager to be able to manage 5 or 6 juniors. If they were, I call them tadpoles, like just straight from school, you'd be able to manage a lot less on the same amount of time. So we have managers in each department. You probably imagine by the amount of new work that I've said we take on, we have a pretty hefty internal resources department. So that's the non-billables. We operate on a 2-to-1 ratio, and that's sort of been a consistent ratio. When that's been intentional or not intentional, it's just always happened on a 2-to-1 ratio. So for every 2 billable team members, we end up with a non-chargeable team member, whether that is I've got full-time digital marketing, so full-time content creation, full-time business development manager who brings in all of the new work every single month. We've got a full-time head of compliance, executive assistants, client coordinators, onboarding team. And so you can imagine the resource it takes to onboard that many people, because actually even like Xero release their report every year and it's got like small, medium and large practices. And actually we were taking on clients at 7 times the rate that the largest companies were taking on clients. And so actually our admin team has to be 7 times the size of that too. I just have the internal resources. But that's where we use a very solid onboarding process. We use core values. Scaling is irrelevant. If you're just bringing on loads of new work, and it's all falling out the bottom because you're doing a terrible job. Like, actually, the financial processes, the technical quality that we deliver services at, that's why we've been able to scale so sustainably, but also so rapidly. It's not all just coming from social media. All of the happy clients are generating more happy clients because we're delivering what we promised. Like, the normal accounts team, an accountant's portfolio would be able to take £102,000, which is 8.5K per month. Business services is a little bit different. So, like, profit margins are very different in the bookkeeping teams. And so we do that on a task basis, but on a numerical basis, it's about 6.5K a month for business services, 8.5K for the statutory compliance team.
Okay, so business services, how many people is that made up?
Four.
Four, okay. And they're doing 6.5K per month each. Yeah, okay.
You don't actually offshore at all. Everybody is based in the UK, correct?
Absolutely, yes. Everyone is grassroots in-house on payroll in the UK. So we do no offshoring. So we've got 16 full-time members of staff.
Okay, in those 16, how many are in accounting? How many are in audit, etc.?
So audit, we are currently just starting. And so we actually use our own internal resources for audit at the moment. We've got one consultant, one in mortgages, none in HR, and then everybody else is in the accounting team. And then again, some of the people work across platform. And so within StriveX Accounting, we have 10 full-time accountants that are split between two teams. And then we have 6 non-chargeable members of staff.
And then here's Rachel's answer about a question that Reza Huda asked her about working from home, to what extent the team can work from home.
So we're completely hybrid. So everybody has to come into the office one day a week. They have to be commutable at least one day per week to where we are. And then for the rest of the time, we are hybrid, flexi, work from anywhere. So I've got workations abroad in the UK. Lots of the team do. We have lots of the team members who have family in other countries, and so they can work abroad. A couple are working abroad at the moment. So yeah, we are completely hybrid, in the office one day a week, together for that sense of community. And to make the TikTok content, that'll be uploaded together one day per week.
Cool.
So the question was around onboarding. Yes. So we recruit based on core values. And so we try and treat the technical qualifications as the theory test. Core values is the practical test. So we try and make sure that we are blending the two at all times. I feel like for us, we are such a strong culture firm. If we recruited purely on technical content, it just wouldn't be the same firm. And so we sort of weight them both evenly. And then actually that weight shifts in management. We need the culture to be even stronger in management. So stronger culture, stronger core values, stronger vibe check when it comes to managers as well. I mentioned a couple of times, we have a course called Practice Makes Perfect, which is a course that helps you to start and scale your own accountancy practice. Within that course, we have 120 training videos. We actually use those training videos to onboard our own team as well. So within the training sections, you can buy working papers. So working papers that we use for every single different element within the business, limited company, corporation tax, VAT, bookkeeping, self-assessments, for people who have never worked in practice before, all of the way through to people who've got loads of practice experience. You can then break down tab by tab on working papers, guided tutorials of either me or James talking them through. You're looking at a HP agreement for the first time. How do we pull out the interest? Are we looking for the gross figure or are we looking for the net figure? How do we capture the interest? What goes on the balance sheet? What goes in the P&L? What journals are we looking at? How do we pull together the working papers? And so not only do we sell that to people to start and scale their own, we actually treat that as our own internal training program as well. And so we do have the technical on-demand content. I do a lot of soft skills training. So I do train the trainer training. So I teach the team how to have training sessions with clients, how to embrace those soft skills, how to maximize every touch point. So many elements of the inside of our business. I've always been franchised on the inside. So from a sales perspective, we wanted other practice owners to be able to buy that as like an off-the-shelf white label product with no ongoing franchise fees. But for us, we wanted to make StriveX a machine that we can constantly be feeding new information into. Whether it's tweaky changes in working papers, all of the way through to templated emails, requests, automated elements that go out to people. We've built this machine and we get to do that. So it's just an induction into what that looks like on the inside. Every single team member has a computer desktop background, which has all of our core values in. They're specific to every single team. So core values are the same for everybody. But all of the other things that sit on our desktop background are specific to each team. So we teach each team. If anyone follows me online, you'll know that I'm a bit of a productivity princess. And I am all about just try and do things with as much efficiency as possible. And so we teach all of the team not only how to email each other and how to communicate with each other. So like, I would never expect someone to just email someone with an email subject. I want to know, is this a quick tick, a task or a project? I want to know if it's urgent or important, and I want to know how long it's going to take me to do it before you then tell me the actual subject that this relates to. And nobody emails me internally without those three things before the email comes to me, so that I can bulk together the quick ticks, I can prioritize what's urgent and important, and I know how long it's going to take me, allocate that and change my diary accordingly. So we teach the team how to bulk together lots of tasks. And then we also tell them in what order should you be doing different things. So allocate time to your emails. We have a 24-hour response time to all clients on emails. Clear down your emails of the first thing that you do in the day. Respond to any questions that you've got from clients. Then log into Accountancy Manager, check what tasks you've got on for the day, block out your time, communicate with your team members, and then crack on. I believe that productivity is a skill that is taught, and we're not taught it at school. And so we really prioritize helping people to understand what productivity looks like for them. What time of day are you productive? I am a huge morning person. I think that's sobriety, but I'm a huge morning person. And so for me, 5 till 8 a.m. is where I get my most high value work done. I'm standing up at my desk now because it's the afternoon and my soul has left my body because I've been up since 5. Then just understanding and like flexible working options, how that comes into play. When you've got flexible working options, you can work at the time that suits you and you can work where it suits you. Have a standing desk, sit down. Be upside down if you're billing. I don't mind. And just seeing how that works. It's just been really amazing, actually. As an employee who didn't have any flexibility, it's been really fantastic to see the results of doing it that way.
Before we go to chapter 7 about staff benefits, here's a quick word from our sponsor, BGL.
Hey, Tax Talkers. Are you tired of manual identity verification processes? Introducing BGL ID, your fast, secure, automated identity verification solution. BGL ID seamlessly integrates with BGL's CAS 360, SimpleFund 360, and SimpleInvest 360 solutions, with no setup or training for existing clients. Don't get left behind as regulations tighten. With straightforward pricing, no minimum commitments, and instant results, BGL ID is the solution for you. To learn more, visit bglcorp.com/taxtalks.
Chapter number 7, Team Benefits.
I'm very aware, like, we're in a very unique position during the hiring crisis to have a waiting list of so many people. Again, that's not accidental. We've worked really hard to get to that point. A lot of it is huge amounts of investment. Lots of you might have seen content that we create about our benefits package. We pay incredibly well. We pay 10% above the market rate for the role. And so I think it's easy to look at that and think, oh, it's just social media. Please know, social media is just the shiny side that supports an insane amount of financial infrastructure behind the scenes. And I'm only talking about things that are real and that are happening behind the scenes. And so that's the hard bit. The hard bit is paying 10% above the market rate for a role. It's prioritizing people's well-being. It's having reduced working hours. It's having flexible working options. It's taking the team on holiday. We have an employee assistance program, so they all get access to therapy. We do personal one-to-one development coaching. Like, that's the hard stuff. It's easy for me to talk about it on the internet, but the hard stuff is actually doing the things that mean that not only do people come, but they stay. So we, from our employee waiting list, have a 100% retention rate. So every single person who's joined our waiting list that we've hired, we've still got now. And again, like, we're 3 years, we're rapidly scaling. That's not heard of. And so the first thing is to say, that's not the hard bit. Talking about it on social media is not the hard bit. It's doing the stuff that actually, to be honest, lots of practices in 2023 aren't prepared to do. We see lots of people outsource, like everybody is full-time on payroll in-house in the UK. Lots of clients come to us because of that, because a lot of our competitors are outsourcing. We're post-pandemic, people love to see it. Again, not saying that one's right or one's wrong, but like that's what works for us. So the hard stuff is putting your money where your mouth is and actually investing in it. But what we get back from that is retention, it's high engagement, it's members of staff who live and breathe what we do, they know where we're going. And so at any given time, we'll normally be fully recruited for the next 6 months. So I'm currently recruiting as far as like May and June 2024 with 2 or 3 hires before that. So when somebody joins our waiting list, let's say you've seen a bit of content, you've searched how to get a job in accountancy with no experience, and then you started following me, you might have seen a bit of content creation or you've seen something that we've done and you've clicked a button that says become a member of staff. You then come to our waiting list, you can join our waiting list. So there you have to tell me who you are. You tell me who you are inside of work, who you are outside of work. You submit a CV. You tell me what department you'd like to go into. Again, we obviously got like 8 or 9 different departments now. You tell me what department you'd like to go in. You tell me if you are passively or actively searching for a job. And this blew my mind the first time that I analyzed this. So 85% of the people that join our waiting list are completely passively looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking for another job, but they want to work for us. Like, and I remember the first time I interviewed someone and said, why are you looking to leave your current role? And she like dead straight face said, I'm not. I just want to work for you. And like, it's a lot of pressure. And being an employer is not something that anyone teaches you how to do. That's a lot of pressure to have on someone's life. But 85% of the people being completely passive, what that does is remove time. And when you remove time for recruitment, you make fantastic choices. And not only do you make fantastic choices, but the candidates do too. So if you remove time pressure, someone hates their job and they want to start next week. Someone's just quit and you need to replace them next week. You make decisions that you wouldn't normally do. But because we are so forward planning, and as soon as someone joins the waiting list, I can review their CV and book in a chat with them and say, what are you doing summer next year? Do you want to come work for us? Actually, not only is that building a pipeline of candidates that if something happens, if something changes, if someone leaves, or if actually we need someone sooner, I can pull that whole pipeline forward. So we had someone start last week that was going to start in February, but due to an internal promotion, we just pulled her forward. So not only have we got that long, strong pipeline, we're also removing time. And so we can have conversations with people and say, go away and think about this. Like, so often we make huge life job situations under time pressure. Come in, meet the team, spend a lunch break with us, play a card game with us, make a TikTok, like come in and spend time with us and then see if you want to do it. Like, people view houses 2 or 3 times before they decide where they're going to live. And like, a job is no different. And so not only does it remove time, it just gives people the headspace to make great decisions. So we review everybody as soon as they join the waiting list. We screen them, we chat to them, we do core values check. It's a 3-step recruitment process, but we're normally hired like 6 months in advance by people coming on the waiting list, which is then movable. So we do offer letters. People accept offer letters, but that's not contractual. Obviously, it's just a verbal agreement. I mean, it's contractual from our perspective. I just mean if someone changes their mind. So we make them an offer letter, they accept. And then we just keep really open communication with them. So the person who just started a couple of weeks ago was supposed to start in February. But when we knew we were going to make an internal promotion, we just got in touch with them and said, are you starting early? And she said, yes. And so, yeah, not only is it a pipeline, but it's this movable resource within the practice that we've been able to move and change as we need.
I think you already have about 100 people on your wait list for new staff members, correct?
So actually now it's 186.
Is it worth creating more content from them? I mean, you already have enough people lining up to work for you. What's the driver behind you creating more content for new staff members when you already have such a long waiting list for staff members?
Oh, yeah. We're just always on the lookout for the best talent. And some people apply and it's time sensitive. Other people apply and they want to wait. But also, again, a lot of the content that is specifically targeting accounting students, obviously the benefit to me is that they become employees, but the benefit to them is they are passionate, they fall in love with finance, they get educated, they're watching long-form content, they are looking at what a day in the life of an accountant looks like, they're watching vlogs of us all go on holidays together and realizing that they can and should be expecting more from their employer in terms of benefits package. And so the benefit to me as a business is that they join my employee waiting list, but the benefit to them, there are 12 different benefits of why they would continue to engage in my content after they join the waiting list. And so I have one benefit, but actually with the bursary schemes, with the content creation and like the way I am disrupting the space of what it looks like to be an employer in the accounting industry, consuming that content would change someone's life.
Staff benefits. You pay 10% above market value. You have reduced working hours, one-to-one career development, etc. How do you pay for all this? You know, do you have smaller margins or do you charge more or are you just way more efficient than everybody else? How do you finance, you know, this 10% above market value, having everybody in the UK and then offering all these added benefits?
Very easy answer. I pay £0 in recruitment fees because of what I do online. I literally spoke to a practice owner yesterday who recruited 3 new members of staff in January and paid £80,000 in recruitment fees. I can pay 10%. I can take the entire team on a holiday every year. I can put all of these things into my employees because of what I do online, I do not pay. I've got 187 people waiting to join my practice. I do not pay recruitment fees. And so actually that increase in benefits package comes from us saving literally hundreds of thousands of pounds every single year by not paying recruitment fees.
That's assuming that you are hiring one or two people every year.
Yeah, I mean, our team has doubled in size every year. So yeah.
Yeah, doubled in size, but now with 16 people, I assume that slowly double of 16 is already, but then double of 32 and then double of 64, it probably starts slowing down a little bit. But I get your point. So you would be hiring 2, 3, 4 people every year, and that will save you 100,000 pounds roughly in recruitment fees. And eventually this 10% above market value and everything else. I find it difficult that the saving in recruitment fees covers all that. When you are competing with somebody, for example, who has their entire workforce in the Philippines, for example, although in Europe, it wouldn't be the Philippines because the time difference is too great. You probably have people. Where do most UK businesses offshore to? Is it still Asia or probably it would be East Europe, correct?
Yes, yeah, some is Eastern Europe, some is like India, Pakistan. Good. Depends on how much client contact, I think, the third parties have, whether they need it to be a time difference or not. Some people, I literally heard some practice owners outsource where there is a time difference so that it happens overnight in the UK. If they don't have any client contact, like the billable work just gets done overnight rather than being when they're at work, which some people enjoy. So the first chunk of margin comes from not paying recruitment fees. The second comes from client, like staff retention. Our staff retention rate is very high. So like our first member of staff is still with us now. Our retention is so high. And I think that is where there's a huge, it's not a direct financial cost in terms of cash, but to replace a member of staff, there are statistics that it costs 67% of someone's annual salary to replace that team member. And if you can keep retention very high, actually paying 10% above the market rate for their role is still great value for money. And then the third thing is a lot of our clients cite our benefits package and the way that we treat our team as one of the core reasons that they chose to work with us. So being self-employed, you have spending power, and your spending power comes from you deciding to spend your money with people who share the same values as you. And post-pandemic, the small business owner community in the UK is incredibly strong. And as a very strong values-driven business, actually we attract lots of clients who share the same values, and that is actually supporting the British economy. And so lots of our new clients cite the benefits package as one of the main reasons that they work with us. They get to know that every single person that they speak to is happy, well, safe, looked after, and financially secure. If outsourcing is super common in Australia, it's very, very easy to sort of, it's fight to the bottom of the fees to win the work. Whereas again, in the UK, lots of people do outsource. I don't know the percentages. Lots of people do outsource in the UK. But I think for us, it's an integrity piece. It's being a grassroots British business, and that integrity won't leave me. And so, I don't see it changing.
Rachel Harris of StriveX in the UK, and also Accountant She on social media. So that was StriveX in the UK and how they grew from 50,000 pounds to 1 million within 3.5 years. Hopefully it gave you some food for thought. Now, before you go, let's do two more things. One, I would love to tell you about a new podcast. I think you really should give a try. And two, I would like to tell you what comes next on Tech Talks in terms of topics. The new podcast, which I think is very much worth your time, is Explain That by Velocity Legal in Melbourne. You probably remember Andrew Henshaw. Andrew has spoken on Tax Talks about trust, international tax, Division 7A, Section 100A, the main residence exemption, small business CGT exemptions, PSI, amendment periods, and a whole lot of other things. It really is an impressive list. And Andrew will still present on Tax Talks. He hasn't left. But in addition, Velocity Legal has now started a podcast as well, and it is called Explain That.
Welcome to Explain That by Velocity Legal, where complex legal concepts are unraveled and made easy to understand. Here's your host, the Managing Director of Velocity Legal, Andrew Henshaw.
So that was the intro to explain that. And in Explain That, Velocity Legal takes one topic and covers it in three-part mini-series, so over three episodes. In the first, you hear the basics and in-depth discussion of the key concepts of the topic and commonly arising issues. Then in the second episode of that three-part mini-series, you hear about case studies. You hear discussion of real-life anecdotes, hypothetical scenarios around the topic. You know, what if? A lot of what if questions. And then in the third episode, you get the big picture, discussion about the future of the relevant topic, potential reforms, current issues, and so on. So that is the structure of each three-part mini-series. And then just to give you a flavor of the topics that are coming now, not in any particular order, they are transfer duty implications and exemptions, financial settlements in family law, business restructures, restraints of trade, fit-outs and leases, and share sales versus business sales. All very interesting topics. To give you a flavor, let me play you a soundbite from the first episode where Andrew Henshaw interviews Robert Osler about the legal basics for startups. So here is Robert talking about what he will cover in this first episode.
Firstly, to start with structure issues. So how do you structure your startup best to set it up for success? That's really important because there's many different ways you can run a business. And of course, a startup is just another business, but it has some unique aspects to it. And in particular, you know, founders may not be sure about what the best structure to use for their startup is. So we'll touch on structure, and that'll lead into, well, once you've got a structure, what are the rules, if you like, that we should be using to govern the founder's relationship within that structure? That's a key thing to discuss, and we'll touch on that. We'll talk a little bit about protecting intellectual property, so IP. That's key because often the key asset of any startup is the IP. Without that IP, there's often not that competitive advantage that that startup otherwise would have. So that's a key point we'll talk about too. Then the legal nitty-gritty gets a bit of airtime. So we'll talk about contracts. In particular, how do we document the commercial arrangements that startups have, whether it's with customers, suppliers, with investors? That's a key point, that one, which we'll get into more detail as well later. And then finally, we'll touch on, of course, we'll talk about compliance, which is basically just playing by the rules. Some startups are subject to different, more specific industry rules than others. So we'll talk about that and how that affects startups. So today we'll also touch on raising capital. So that's key because, of course, startups need funding to execute their business plan to scale. So we'll talk about some of those key issues, in particular, what are the options to raise capital and how might you go about doing that?
Fantastic. So we've got structure, governance, IP, contracts, compliance, and raising capital.
So all this you hear in the first episode of Explain That, the legal basics and foundations for startups. You can find it on Spotify. Apparently, it's also on Apple Podcasts, but I couldn't find it on Apple Podcasts for the life of me, but it's definitely on Spotify. And then to finish this, here is the outro for Explain That.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Explain That by Velocity Legal.
Now, looking ahead, in the next episode, we will talk about how AI can really boost your SMSF processing. And we will speak with Ron Lesh of BGL. But we don't just talk about SMS processing. We will also talk about AI in general, ChatGPT, OCR, corporate compliance, and what AI can do there. It is a big walkthrough. And I hope you will find this interesting, even if you're not on BGL software products, because we talk a lot about what AI can do. And that is part of the challenge for us to realize what is now possible. We tend to use our softwares just the way we always have done, not realizing that there is so much more power under the hood now. It's almost like you're driving a car, and while you drive, the engine gets a lot more power without you realizing. It's almost like you're driving, not in Australia because we only have 110 limit, so that's not getting us very far. Let's say you're driving on the right side in the right lane on German Autobahn, and you're sticking to 150 because you don't realize that your car can do more. And while you're driving, your engine actually changes, and you could now easily pull out to the left and drive 200 and hold speed with everybody else in the left lane. And you don't, because you don't realize that your engine has changed. That's, I think, a little bit like the software with AI, but I'm not sure whether this is a good algorithm. Maybe it misses the point a little bit, but you know what I mean. There's so much AI now in our softwares and we don't realize it and just keep doing what we're doing without realizing that we could actually pull out and do 200 without any much effort. So that's what we will talk about in the next episode, AI. And yes, we say SMSF processing, but it goes a lot further than that. And then after that, we will talk about PSI, personal services income, but of course, not the PSI test as such. You already know about the results test and the 80%, the related clients test, business premises, employees, you know all that. What we will do with Anil Bridges of Sladen Legal in Melbourne is to really dig deep and go into the examples of TR 2022/3 to flesh out the nuances, to look at how far you can stretch things and does this scenario still fall under this or doesn't. And then in one of the future episodes, we will also go back to practice management and speak with Jamie Jones of Wise Mentoring about growing your practice. That, I think, is a recurring theme for all of us. That's the plan. Thank you for listening and thank you to BGL for their support. To find out more, please go to bglcorp.com. Bye for now and see you in the next episode.